What I'd like to do is to talk a little bit about process. Today we're going to talk about how, if you look at page 5, we're going to talk about how concepts are learned, how young people develop conviction, take on their own beliefs, and so on. Now, let me just tell you what I'm saying about all that. That sounds pretty complicated, but all that means is that in our lives, we're born. I've written on the board up there. That board was clean last night, and now I've written on it. And it's up there. And it's up there till somebody erases it or writes something else over it or whatever. Now, that's that infant that's born. That's that person that's born into the world. They have a clean board. There's nothing on it. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in Christ. They don't believe the Bible. They don't hate anybody. They have some kind of innate love ability and hate ability, but they haven't selected the people that they're going to love or they're going to hate. They don't know right from wrong. They don't know what's good. They don't know what's bad. And there's a certain innateness about us that teaches us as we go along that certain things are better than others or worse than others. But they really don't have any convictions about anything. Now, when you think about that, that's pretty awesome. And it's pretty challenging. But it's a great thing. Because God really has given us these infants in a slow developmental process. And many animals out in the animal kingdom, they put their young out almost immediately. And the young have to fend for themselves. They may teach them how to give food or grub worms, but beyond that, they're pretty much on their own. And they leave and go their own way. But God has given us a slowly developing individual. And historically, those children are tied to the home in almost every part of the world. One thing about communism was that they decided that you had to take children away from this environment in order to teach them to believe in communism. And it worked because you got people away from their families and they didn't have any of those old values that the families had, and so they developed people who believed in communism. But we've got an opportunity to teach children to be something. We got a clean board, and we got an opportunity to write on that board at first, and that's pretty neat. Now, in our country, one of the things that materialism or wealth will do for you is it takes that away from you because it puts the kids into daycare centers, you know, almost when they're born. It puts the kids under somebody else so the mother can go back to work and live in this manner that we'd like to be living in. And so we got to have two cars because we've got two of us working, and we got to have a big house. We got to have all these things, and we got to have television in all the kids' rooms as well, and so on. So we just simply begin to do all those things that isolate parents and children. And what we're doing is we're saying to the rest of the world out there, y'all write on the board for me. I don't have time to write on the board. You write on the board for me. You know, when my kids were growing up, we let Captain Kangaroo write on the board. It's Mr. Roberts now, who is an atheist as well as very liberal in his beliefs about homosexuality and so on. And he gets that into his programs. But that's fine, but it's intellectual and he deals with science and the kids love it. So we say, okay, you write on this. We send the kids to daycare or wherever, and then the teacher does something or whatever. I said something last night that I wanted to prove to you, and I think I can do that. Let me try to give you something to think about here. Let's do some math. And how much time would you think that a child spends in Bible study by the time they are 20 years old? Well, let's figure it out. Let's see how much time they spend. Let's assume that they go to Bible study the week they're born. And let's assume that they get a full 45 minutes on Sunday and 45 minutes on Wednesday. And except for sickness, a time or two during the year, they are at every service and at every Bible class. I'm talking about formal Bible class. So that's 45 minutes and 45 minutes per week, right? So how much is that a week? That's an hour and a half per week. Okay. And that's 2 weeks that we give them off to be sick. 50 weeks. You understand I gave them 2 weeks off for the math. It's a lot easier to do it that way. So how many hours per year? 75 hours per year. Well, that's pretty good, right? We're adding up pretty fast. Now, let's take 20 years. All right. That's how much? That's 1,500 hours when they're 20 years old, and that's in Bible study. Okay. Well, that's pretty exciting. 1,500 hours. That's real good. Now, I've got a clipping in my New Testament there, which in itself admits to be very conservative, and I think it is because I've seen others more than that. But it says that by the time a child in the United States, average child in the United States, is 18, we're going to take 18 instead of 20 here, so I'll cut it down a little bit, 18 years old, the time a child is 18 years old, they will have spent 22,000 hours watching TV. Now, that's not hard to come to. You could figure that out pretty fast if you wanted to. I just didn't believe that, and I started adding up what that would be, and it doesn't really add up to be very much per week because they watch it per day, and that includes videotapes or whatever else. Now, the interesting part about that is that if you add it up, they spend about 1,500 hours in public school. And that ends up to be something like 37,000 hours. Now, I know what you're thinking, boy, there's not that many hours in 18 years, and you add all of it up, and there really is. It really comes out. Now, which one of these 22,000 or 15,000 are intended to make more moral people out of our children? Right. Which one of them does? I mean, would you be satisfied to turn your children loose in public school for all of their morality teaching? Would you be willing to turn them loose with a television set for all of their morality? As a matter of fact, in your teaching at home, what's one of the major factors in what you're having to teach? Okay. What you're really doing is countering all of the things that they're getting up here, right? Now, let me tell you something real interesting. I'm building a sort of a storehouse of things for us to talk about. One of the interesting things that happened is that the courts ruled in a court case in Mobile, Alabama, and it says been upheld in court, that humanism was religion. And they did it because to be a religion, you have to have a creed, you have to have some organization, and you have to have a belief, and it has to deal to some extent with morality, etc. In other words, it's even Satanism is a religion. It's accepted as a non-profit organization. But humanism was reached that. And one of the evidences that they used was that there was a concerted effort to teach a specific doctrine out of specific books. And I used to have a copy of it, and I don't have it anymore, and I can't find it in my files. But the trial was in Mobile, what they brought was textbooks that the humanistic organizations had put into doctrine that they had put in their textbooks. And they were in things like the home economics classes. They weren't in social studies where you'd expect to find it, but they were in the books that were teaching about family, teaching about home, teaching about cooking, doing whatever. They were everywhere else too, but they found themselves into that. And one of the quotes was that, I mean, one of the doctrines that they taught was, don't let anybody teach you morality. You have within yourself the ability to decide what's right or wrong. And the quote was, don't let some parent or teacher or preacher or church official try to tell you what you can and can't do as far as right and wrong is concerned. And that's humanism. I mean, that's the simple core of humanism. Now, that's what you're fighting against in public school. I'm not even talking about, I don't even have to deal with television, but in public school, that's what you're dealing with. So we're looking at 37,000 hours. But we've got this 1,500 hours over here to offset it. So we don't have to worry, right? You understand, we got a problem. And God gave us the solution to that problem by giving us this child with a completely blank chalkboard. And said to the parents, in essence, and that's what he said when they were getting ready to go into the land of Canaan, what did were their instructions to the parents? What were their instructions? If you want to take this land, live a long time, and so on, what are you going to do for your children and your grandchildren? Yeah, you're going to teach them. When they go to bed at night, when they wake up in the morning, all during the day, you're going to write it on the doorpost. You're going to put the law of God there for the children and the grandchildren. So you start out young, and I don't have to go through all the scriptures talking about things. Timothy, when did he learn the scriptures? Yeah, when he was a baby, it says. The word there is small infant, or small child or infant. From a child thou hast known the Holy Scriptures and taught it by his mother's grandmother. And that's what God intended for us to do. Now, I can't get into family values in terms of what you do and how you teach at home. We can talk about how you teach, but as far as what you ought to do, and that's not my goal. But what my goal is this, to say, if we're only going to spend 1,500 hours in Bible study to offset 37,000 hours, these ought to be good 1,500 hours. They ought to be well taught. They ought to be meaningful. They ought to be designed. They ought to be aiming at what we are having to count here. Now, here's what's happened in Bible study. I'll be honest with you. I taught these weekend series for years. I taught as many as 20 or 25 weekends out of the year for a while. And I did several hundred congregations that I was running these. It got to be popular. People weren't all that interested in teaching, but they discovered that a weekend series could substitute for a week-long meeting. And while it was a lot of suffering for one weekend, you got it over with a lot quicker than if you had a 6, 7, 8-day meeting. So everybody had weekend meetings. And I started out doing small congregations around the country. Sewell Hall was active, always has been, in running meetings and all, was small in St. Paul, Minnesota, and places that there weren't very many people. And he would go and he'd say, hey, you know, if you want somebody to do some teacher training or, you know, whatever, you can get Martin. So I was sort of following around doing all of that. And then the big congregations discovered this idea of weekend meetings. And so they would get Jim Cope to come in, and they'd get Harry Pickup to come in, and they ran out of people to get to come in. And so they said, well, what's this Martin Broadwell stuff that they do? So they'd call and say, how about coming and doing your thing? They didn't know what I did, but it was a weekend meeting. So I started doing my thing in these places. And the more I did that, the more I got to thinking, I'm doing maybe more harm than good. Because I really think in a number of places we improve the teaching learning program. And having done that, I found that parents felt like, now I don't have any responsibility because we got these good teachers down there and we got this good teaching program going, so I don't have to worry about it. So I said, maybe I'm doing more harm than good because I'm giving them a substitute. But I discovered that they didn't need me to help them do that, that it was working like this. Here was the deal. The way God intended this thing to be was that the home would rear the children and teach them the values and do the teaching and teach them the Bible and get their interest in the Bible and teach them to do right and morality and so on. And gradually we developed some things that the church could do. There's some things the church could do. The church could do some social kinds of things, get people working together, kids working together, and you could sort of teach more at a time. You could also teach outside children who didn't have the home life, and you could teach children that didn't have the values taught to them at home. So the church ended up with a role in this thing, not very much of a role. Some of y'all grew up maybe in places where the church was in the country, it's way out someplace. And I mean, we had no Bible study. I grew up in a little place called Woodson Chapel, and we had no Bible study classes. Didn't have any children. We had three children in the children's classes. One of them was four. I was 12, and the other one was 15. And that was our Bible study for a year. I mean, we just sort of moved up the spectrum, you know, as it worked out. Each one of us got a year older every year. And so we just sort of, that was all we had. But we had a Bible study sometimes on Sunday morning, but that's all we had. But my mother was a Christian, and mother read the Bible all the time. And it never occurred to me that mother didn't know where anything was in the Bible. I would just say, Mother, where did it say so and so? And she'd tell me. I mean, I didn't think of that as remarkable. I just thought that was a source, and I just went and asked her, you know, that's all. Because she read her Bible all the time. And so we studied, and we talked about things like that. We would come home, and Mother and I Dad was not a Christian at that time. And we'd come home, and on the way home, we'd talk about the Bible and talk about this. And I'd ask questions, she'd answer them, and so on. And it didn't matter that we didn't have any classes at church. Okay, I'm saying all that to say what's really happened now is that this thing has taken an interesting switch. All we have going for us is pretty much what the church does as far as teaching the Bible, religion, and so on. And what's happened is that the home has taken a little bit out of this, and the home has responsibility of being sure the children have their books when they leave home for Bible study. And that's sort of what the home contributes to their teaching. And maybe after they've done their algebra and science and all, have you studied your lesson? And that's about it. Now, I know that's not true in your case, but I'm telling you, if you look across the church as a whole, that's pretty much what has happened. This part out here that had the home doing the teaching, giving the values, writing on this chalkboard in the first 6 years. I mean, a child today that doesn't get to go to school till they're 6 years old is retarded. I mean, they'll never make it, according to the parents. Now, they just say, you know, I've got to get them in you know, nursery school by the time they're at least two and a half, and kindergarten for a couple of years, and then some kind of a preschool or Head Start program or whatever, so that by the time they're 6 years old, they're at least able to do calculus, you know. I mean, if they're not, then they're really retarded. And the poor child will, you know, never make it in life. The only thing they would know, of course, is if they got to spend that time with their parents, with their mother at home, they'd know about life, and they'd know about the Bible, and they'd know about Christ, and they'd know about Christianity, and they'd know how to be moral and all those kind of things. That's not to say you can't do it otherwise. It's just what a load you're placing on that child to compete with all of this other and still try to be a Christian. It's not real easy. It's not real easy. When's the last time you turned on a television show, anytime, even a sports program or whatever, that you didn't hear cursing, vulgarity, God's name used in vain, some not very well veiled immoral suggestion, and which ones on the comedy shows get the most laughter, those that are like that. That's what the child's got to do, is to try to keep their mind straight and their language straight and their life straight, fighting all of that. I spend a lot of time in motels, and they have a thing called specter vision. And last night was looking at trying to find which channels on the television set was the news, or ESPN or whatever, and the night before last, and I was looking at specter vision, and they showed ratings on these things, and they had about 20 programs. Would you believe that 15 of them were R-rated, and they were all current movies? 15 of them are. And the only thing they had below that was, what is it, PG-13, which is the next step down. And they had codes in there, you know, language, nudity, and vulgarity. And the PG-13 dropped one of those three. Not necessarily the same one. They just, you know, if you only had two, it got to be PG-13. If you only had nudity and language, or whatever. I forget the three. It's not vulgarity. It's something else. It's language and nudity and whatever. Violence. Yeah, that's right. V. That was the other one. It's violence. And, you know, if you drop two of those, it drops back down. Okay. That's where we are. Now, what you and I got to do is, how are we going to figure out that a child develops a concept, and that intrudes your next door neighbor, you understand? Now, the difference with the child and your next door neighbor is that your next door neighbor's already got stuff written all over the board. So you got a double factor there. What? You got to get the board erased, and then you got to put something back. Your child's got a clean board, and you can write on it. But your next door neighbor has already got stuff written on it. And it's a hodgepodge, depending on how long and how much they've been around. It's all kinds of things that are confusing. So first thing we got to do is figure this. What is a concept? And secondly, we got to figure out, how is it that somebody develops a belief, a commitment, a thing that they call an internalization? In other words, this is really Martin's beliefs. He really believes this. How did that happen? A child grows up basically saying, I can't do that, mother won't let me. My dad would have a fit if I did that. That's their conviction. Their conviction is not that this is wrong. What is their conviction? I don't want to suffer the consequences of doing this because I'll be punished for doing it. And that's a natural process. It does that. But at some point in time, they grow up to the point in which when somebody suggests that they do something, they say not that my parents won't let me do it, but they say, I don't believe that's right. That's internalization. That's conviction. That's where we try to get. See, a child goes off to school, and we say, man, I sure hope, you know, that they do right when they're there. What you really hope is that they believe in right and wrong. Not that they will do right and wrong because of what they've, you know, the consequences that they're going to have. That's the real test. The real test is not when they go off to school, but when they're 8 years old. Are they saying to their friends, I don't think that's right? Or are they saying, Mom and Daddy won't let me? Or Mom and Daddy doesn't like it? Or my church doesn't let me do that? You see, the conviction has got to come. Now, we've got to teach that, and I want to show you today some ways of making that happen. But the first thing we've got to do is figure out what a concept is. And in order to figure out what a concept is, I gave you some samples here on page 5 at the top of the page. I'd like for you to try to define a concept. Question number 1, and here's what we're going to do today. We're going to start, y'all sort of clustered together, and that's pretty good. If you turn around and work with them, and if you three will work together, you four work together, and your three brains over there will work together, if you'll just start working on it. If you will answer that question, talk about it yourself, and if somebody dropped in from Mars and heard us talking about concept and said, what's the concept? What would you say to them? Oh, well, I'll tell you. And then you write down. So y'all work it out on your own. What is a concept? And come to agreement on it. Okay, go for it. Okay, y'all got it? Isn't it interesting that we talk about things all the time and then we don't know what they are half when it comes down to it?
Do you want the definition or examples?
No, I don't want examples. I gave you some examples there. All I want is your definition of it. Okay, now, let me tell you what let's do. Let's just do this in an interesting sort of way. Each group pick one person to speak for your group or read your answer. Now, let me give you a definition of what the reader's role is. I mean, give you a standard for the person who reports for your group. Y'all listen, because this is really critical. It's the best role you can have is to be the person that reports for your group. Because the person that reports for your group is the only person in your group that does not have to defend anything your group says. Whatever your reporter says, you got to defend it with your life. And even if they say something you don't agree with, you got to defend it because you let them speak for it. Now, I usually tell people that, you know, that means you pick somebody that you trust or that you can beat up, one or the other. Either way, it doesn't matter. Well, if your group will buy you one, that's fine, you know. But see, that's part of the trust, you know. You say the wrong thing, you don't get a free lunch, you see. Okay, and now we're talking some things, and one of them is techniques. One of the hardest things you have in teaching Bible classes, especially when you line all the benches up facing the front over here, the wall, I mean, so that nobody sees anybody, it's really tough to get people to communicate in a Bible class because they somehow don't have anybody to look at but the teacher. And people talk to the people they can see. So in a class, it's really tough because all you're seeing is the back of somebody's head or me. That's the only thing. So you talk to me because you don't want to talk to the back of somebody's head. So it works out that way. I liken it sometimes to imagine that you've got company, and everybody, you got all the chairs lined up like we line these benches up, and then we just sit around and talk about things that, and you know, but nobody can see anybody. They're all looking at the back of everybody's head. But that's what we do here in the class. So that's why you don't get a lot of stuff. So what we do is that we just break you up into some groups like this, and then you turn around. First thing you did, you turn around. See, he's still sitting sideways over there because he can't talk to these people otherwise. Y'all turn around and you had to talk, see, to talk to each other. So I just make it a little easier for you. Okay, tell me what a concept is. What did y'all say a concept was back over there? Wait. Okay, excuse me. Who's reading? Who's the spokesperson? You're the spokesperson. Okay, y'all got to defend whatever she said. And I'm going to ask questions. An idea and a common belief. Okay. Common to whom? Either one of the other two of you. Common to whom? In other words, it is only a concept if everybody believes it. See what I mean? You see? Aren't you glad you got to be the spokesperson? You know. Well, let's just try some others. I mean, you know, that's the best one that I've gotten first from anybody. So let's try and see what y'all. What do y'all got? Who's speaking for y'all? A lot of finger pointing going on. Yeah. Personal set of values. That's pretty esoteric, and I don't even know what esoteric means. And it's, but I don't know what you said either. So it's all right. It's an idea defined by your own personal values. Is that the same thing that they said? Common belief. How does that differ from common belief?
Your own values rather than the common values.
Okay.
Personal values.
Asceticism, we mentioned this morning, is a concept. Before we said anything about it, quoted from Colossians and all, the first time you heard it, how many of you immediately knew what we were talking about when we said asceticism? Okay, what's your concept of asceticism? Okay, but what's your concept of asceticism?
Now or before?
Before. What's y'all concept of asceticism? That's exactly right. That's the right answer. So I don't have a concept of it if I don't know anything about it. So I got to know something about it, right? I got to know something about it. Yeah. By itself, it is a concept. I just don't have that concept. I don't have the concept of it. Now, the point is, well, no, let's see. What did y'all say? Who's speaking for you?
Abstract ideas and facts revolving in a system of thought.
Well, is that a I may not be able to go on after hearing that, but... Oh boy, is that a concept or what? You know, I would opt for the or what. but don't y'all feel guilty that you didn't have anything like that? I thought theirs was, you know. Read it again. I think it's worth hearing, even though. Okay. Would y'all agree with that? Does that same thing y'all said? That's right. It is, man, George. Yes, sir. Isn't it interesting that the only one we can understand is the one that the real people came up with? What'd y'all say? I just hesitate to ask.
Plan or idea that's put into practice.
Okay. Plan or idea that's put into practice. Can I put the church into practice? Can I put God into practice?
If you don't.
Do I put God into practice? Or do I put God's teaching into practice? I'm the teacher. I ask the question. Okay. Don't apologize. Just stay humble. How does a concept differ from an idea? See, you said fact or idea, didn't you? How does a concept differ from an idea?
An idea is really true.
A fact can be substantiated, an idea is
considering from the same. And it may be false or maybe true, but it has been established. It's an idea.
So, like words.
I know. I just don't know what it is, and I was trying to find out.
A concept is like that. It communicates a system of thoughts.
Now you said the word I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear a system of thoughts. That's what I'm trying to find out. Here's what happens. Let me ask you this. When I say church, if I went down the street and knocked on doors and ask the people, what's your concept of church? Would I get the same answer? I'd get a different answer, which says I'm getting a different concept. Right, okay. Now, and what you said is that it may not all be right. It may not all be right. And what they said was it's a shared or common belief. And it may not be, it's definitely not common. The reason I ask them, does everybody have that same one? It wouldn't be common when I went up down the street here, would it? It wouldn't be common to everybody. It would be common to some people. And that's sort of the collectivity of this thing. That's how you put it together. A system of ideas. What we have is that we have facts. I know something. I'm sorry. Let's put those facts all around here. I have a fact, and 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 I have a fact. And I have some ideas about those facts. I have some thoughts about those facts. Now, what I got, a hodgepodge of nothing, haven't I? I haven't got anything there. But I work with that, and I begin to work with it, and I tie this fact with this idea, with this fact, with that idea, and with this fact, and with this fact down here. And what I get out of that is a concept of something. Does that make sense at all to you? In other words, I tie all these things together. Now, this may be a fact that I don't know. This may be an idea that I don't have. And it may, in fact, relate to this concept of God, love, hope, hell, heaven, the friends, sacrifice, propitiation, all of those things. I may not know much about that. But I have a concept. Is it possible that I could go down the street here and ask people for their concept of the church or the idea or concept of church itself? If I said church, that I could meet somebody that had never in their whole life ever been to a formal religious service of any kind who would have a concept of the church? Absolutely. They sure would. Absolutely. Previous, well, maybe just facts that they've learned. That's right. And so what's our job in teaching? Well, we have to help build that concept by giving facts and relating those facts and giving certain ideas. Ideas meaning, do I want to sacrifice or not? Do I want to be a part of the church or don't I? Those kind of things. Those are ideas. Let me give you a story, true story. I taught at University of Michigan for 27 years. And you find all kinds of weird things on college campuses. And I was teaching there during the period of the 60s, and those were the weirdest days there ever were on college campuses. They're still pretty bad. The only trouble is that weirdness became the standard, and so, you know, you almost got to be normal in order to be weird this day and age. Did you follow that? In other words, weirdness became the standard, and if you got to be normal in order to stand out, and then you're thought of as being weird because you're just normal. You're not going around barefooted with dirty hair. But anyway, I was walking down the street in Ann Arbor, and this fellow came up to me or was crossing the street and facing me and said, "Can I talk to you?" And I had on his Dracula robe and had his hair sort of slicked back a little bit, and had his, you know, that black robe that they wear fastened here, and it was, came around black and all. And he said, "Can I talk to you?" And he was trying to sell me a paper called a Processian. I don't know what that meant, but it was an organization of people. They called themselves the Processionist. And I asked him a little bit about it. And he said, "Well, what we have realized is that God and Satan have patched up their differences." You want to let them in or not? I mean, it's all right. No, it's all right. You know, we're not bothering them.
I don't think that's the point.
Oh, is it? Well, I mean, you know, I grew up, we had lots of termites when I was in the country, you know. I don't think any of them ever had that long of toenails, but anyway, God and Satan have patched up their differences. Actually said Jesus and Satan had patched up their differences, and now they have decided not to have hell and heaven as a separate place, but they've decided that the earth is hell and they're going to convert it into heaven by making the earth a lot better place to live. And so we take up money, we work for hospitals, and we work for children and orphans homes and so on in order to make heaven on earth, make it a better place, which we call heaven. Okay. Now, that's all I really heard. Now, what happened was he wouldn't give me the magazine unless I gave him 50 cents, and I wouldn't give him 50 cents, and so I'm holding this magazine, and I am talking and speed reading at the time that I'm talking to him, you know. I'm trying to read this whole thing. And I found a little more about it, but the only biblical words I found in it were Satan, Jesus, heaven, and hell. That's the only four words that I found that were biblical words. Now, what was their concept of Jesus? That's right. Exactly. Why? Because they didn't have any facts. They had some ideas that they formed without the facts, and they had a concept of Jesus. They had a concept of Satan, who turned out to be a pretty nice guy. As you read this, you know, he was a pretty nice guy, and it never did say how they passed up their differences, but here's what I ask. Here's the question. What would you say to somebody like that? I won't tell you what I did. And I don't know what I did right or wrong. I did get my point across to him that he didn't want to talk to him anymore, because later on that day I was coming down that same street and he was crossing this, not the same street, but another street on the same light that I was. And he saw me and he turned around and went back. So he obviously didn't want to talk anymore, which was probably bad on my part. What would you say? Okay. But it was very real to him, because he saw these poor, suffering children who had been neglected and thrown out in the cold, cruel world. And he saw all the sickness and disease, and he was helping that.